We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Well, I couldn't be any more excited to talk to my guest today. That's Derek Moore, about his impact on this year's team moving forward at Michigan, but also his future, a guy that I've talked a lot about, and I'm really excited about him on the field, off the field as well. We'll get to Derek Moore, and I'm going to have Brian Bush join me in just a few moments on In the Trenches.
Welcome to the official podcast of Michigan football, In the Trenches with John Jansen, presented by Meijer, presenting sponsor of the 2022 Michigan football season and proud supporter of hundreds of local sports teams across the Midwest. The former two-time captain and national champion covers the Wolverines better than anyone.
Can I just like, kind of like just, you know, like drop him back? And for some reason, I don't know, he just... He's just off the ground.
You can say it. It's okay.
This is In the Trenches, presented by Meijer. Once again, here's John Jansen.
Welcome back, friends. A lot going on MGO Blue Podcast. Already out. Came out yesterday, Tuesday. Defend the Block with Brian Bush. Soon to be junior Layla Filia and new assistant coach Melanie Moore joined him on this week's edition of Defend the Block, and coming out a little bit later today on Wednesday, an early edition of Conquering Heroes. This week with Hannah Nielsen of Women's Lacrosse, they're gearing up for Thursday's Big Ten semis in Columbus against top-ranked Northwestern. So excited about everything that's going on here at MGO Blue Podcast. Now I want to bring in my partner, and I already introduced him a couple of times, the voice of Michigan basketball. You can hear him on Defend the Block as well as here every single week. Mr. Bush, how are you?
I'm great, John. I am a sucker for those draft night calls where they inform a player that you're going to become an insert NFL team nickname here. They were great. And maybe my favorite is someone who we'll talk about in a little bit. I think Brad Robbins thought he was getting pranked.
It was a great reaction. And, you know, when you think about where, how often punters, or infrequently, punters are drafted, kickers are drafted. Jake Moody, Brad Robbins. I actually thought when Jake was taken in the third round by the San Francisco 49ers, that we might hear them also draft Brad Robbins. They need a punter, and those two work so well together. It's snap, hold, kick, good. We've talked about that a lot of times. That holder for Jake Moody throughout the course of his career was Brad Robbins. I thought that might be an indication of what San Francisco was going to do, but I don't even know, and I'm not sure that there'd be anybody out there that would know, but when was a time or a last time a team drafted not just one kicker, but two?
Well, John, that information is available. It came out from someone who knows the Wolverines pretty well, in Adam Schefter, as Michigan became the second school in the last 40 years to have a kicker and a punter drafted in the same draft. Utah had it with Matt Gay and Mitch Wishnowsky in 2019. So not super far back for the last instance, but beyond that, it'd been a long time.
Oh, yeah. I guess I was referencing if it was San Francisco and they drafted a kicker and a punter, who in a draft could get away with drafting two specialists in one draft. And I thought maybe San Francisco had enough talent on both sides of the ball that they might try that that route. But it is always fun, and we've talked about it year in, year out, about watching guys get drafted. It is a special moment, whether you're, you know, hey, in Kansas City this year, or you're at home and the cameras are there. It's an unbelievable moment and a goal that's attained, and it's celebrated by friends, family, and obviously the player that's drafted.
Yeah, no doubt. It's awesome. We will get into each and every pick from the Wolverines group of nine players who were selected this past weekend. And you know, you talk about maybe a team doubling up on a Wolverine. Well, that happened a lot. We'll get into it in a bit. But before we do that, we start our 7 from 77 with some news and notes that came out since our last recording. This is at the tail end of kind of that portal entry window in college football. Michigan, of course, very busy in the portal adding talent, but we did see a few departures in the last few days. Wide receiver A.J. Henning, of course, he was the only player in that 2021 edition of the game to score a touchdown for Michigan other than Hassan Haskins. Then linebacker Nakai Hill-Green, DBs R.J. Moten and Damani Dent. Just your overall impressions, what stood out about those four departing? Certainly some names that Michigan fans are familiar with.
Yeah, and I mean, nothing should really surprise us anymore. However, I was surprised in hearing Henning, Hill-Green, and Moten were entering the portal, because these are guys that saw a lot of time. Obviously, Hill-Green, Nakai Hill-Green, was injured most of last year, all of last year, but were guys that had seen time on the field. Coach and position coaches had talked highly of each of these individuals, and they were going to be called upon in this coming year to play major roles in offense, defense, and special teams. So surprised at the names that went in the portal, but everybody goes in the portal for their own reasons. And I think one of them, when you look at the wide receiving core, A.J. Henning probably wanted more time on the field, and I don't know that it was going to be there as a receiver for Michigan. We know he's really good at reverses and some trick plays, and obviously as a specialist, he probably wanted more time on the field, you know, as a wide receiver. So he's going to find a place where he has better opportunity, and we wish him well. We wish all of these guys well. Nakai Hill-Green missed time last year due to his injury, and it's a very deep linebacker room. We will miss him, but thankfully for Michigan recruiting and the transfer portal, with Junior Colson, Mike Barrett, Ernest Hausman, it's a very deep group, a talented group, experienced group. And then the secondary, I think the one that probably surprised me the most was R.J. Moten. Entering his name in the transfer portal, and I don't know if it was pressure from, you know, other guys that were maybe going to get some more time. It really doesn't matter. I just hope that he finds a place where he can find success that makes him happy. Damani Dent, the same thing. And all of these guys, we wish them well. We thank them for the time and their efforts and their production on the field, and we hope that they do well wherever they land.
Yeah, Nakai Hill-Green already has committed to Charlotte. Of course, Biff Poggi, the new head coach there. A few Wolverines have gone down that way as of this recording. Unsure about the rest of the group, but we certainly wish all of those guys the best of luck. Number two on our 7 from 77, some scheduling news. It was made official by Michigan late last week that Michigan and Texas will make that flip. We talked about it a couple of months ago, where the Longhorns will now come to Ann Arbor in September of 2024. Michigan will make the return trip to Austin in 2027. I think we discussed it some when that was reported, and it was pretty much solidified, all but the official press releases from the two universities, that likely what that will mean for Michigan in the short term, this coming season, the final season of the 14-team Big Ten setup, Michigan is slated to play 4 home Big Ten games and 5 road Big Ten games. I would expect that to remain the same for next season, because the way Michigan has staggered its non-conference schedules over the last the next 4 years, they've got 3 at home next year, 2 at home in 25, and then the same in 26, 27. So anticipate that. We'll see when those schedules come out. Will the Big Ten do what they used to do with just spreading everything out and giving you the conference schedule 3-4 years sometimes in advance? That's still to be determined, but we'll see about that. The other things, Western Michigan will be Michigan's season openers in both 2026 and 2029. Always cool to see an in-state school come to the Big House. And UTEP will be the week 3 foe for Michigan in 2026. Mark your calendars now. Any thoughts, observations to any of that?
Just excited that in 24 with Texas, and then the years after that alternating most years with Texas and Oklahoma, that they're going to play a Power 5 opponent, that they're going to play a team that's going to add to the resume when you get to the end of the season. If you're not going to play one of those Power 5 teams, then keep that money in state. Play one of the directional schools, whether it's Central, Western, Eastern, doesn't matter. I think it's great to keep those dollar bills in the state of Michigan.
100%. All right, time to talk NFL draft. Number 307 from 77, let's discuss the 4 players who heard their names during the week last week, either Thursday night or Friday night. We begin with Michigan's round 1 draftee to the Dallas Cowboys, defensive lineman Mozzie Smith. We figured he was probably the most likely to go in the first round. He was right on that cusp, and we saw him go there to a team, John, that, I mean, Mozzie's going to be a big factor for a team that expects to contend this season.
Expect to contend, and in the NFC, what are you going to have to do? You're going to have to stop the run. Mozzie Smith is going to help Dallas do that. I think it's a really good fit for him. And I talked to him on Thursday morning just before the draft and asked him, hey, what are you hearing? Where are you going? He didn't mention any teams because he knows, we all know that, you know, there's a lot of smoke, there's a lot of mirrors, there's a lot going on leading up to the actual draft. But he felt it was going to be sometime late first, early second. It's exactly where he fell, and I think it's a great situation for him.
Dallas was not done drafting Wolverines. It might have surprised a few people that the second Wolverine off the board was tight end Luke Schoonmaker, but it seemed like his name was rising throughout the process. 58th overall, also to Dallas. And again, he figures to have a chance to, maybe not with gaudy offensive numbers, but you want to talk about a weapon and somebody that they can leave on the field, that's Luke Schoonmaker.
And it's a guy that they can trust. You mentioned leave on the field. He's going to be on the field more times than not. They can throw him the ball. He's going to run good routes. They can trust him with the ball. They can trust him to be in the right place at the right time, but also set the edge. You know, I mentioned it with Mozzie Smith being able to stop the run. In the NFC, because they don't have the elite quarterbacks like they have in the AFC right now, and nobody's going to really argue that. Dak Prescott is a good quarterback, but he's had some issues turning the ball over. They have relied upon, as well as a number of teams in the NFC, on the run game, and that's really where Luke Schoonmaker is going to excel early on in his NFL career.
If you listened last week, one of the potential placement of Michigan prospects was DJ Turner to Cincinnati. You referenced the Dax Hill selection by Cincinnati, and the Bengals come right back to the Wolverine secondary, getting the speedster, the guy who may have raised his stock as much as anybody at the scouting combine with his 40-yard dash. 60th overall, DJ Turner. I mean, all 4 of these guys we're going to talk about here at the outset here, they're going to teams that they expect to contend for a championship next year.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas, already, we've talked about them twice. Now Cincinnati, 2 years ago with Joe Burrow, they were in the Super Bowl. And I think that they're going to be a team that's going to contend again coming out of the AFC. And when you look at, you know, traits, that teams like to draft. Cincinnati, other than the quarterback position, loves to draft speed. Who was the fastest player in the draft? It was DJ Turner. They love to draft guys that have experience playing in Power 5 conferences. They know that they can trust them. They know they've been in some of those pressure situations. And DJ Turner fit everything that Cincinnati was looking for. You plug him in there, along with, obviously, Dax Hill, who's got a couple of years of experience on him. And I think you're looking at a good secondary that's going to be very athletic and very fast.
And then we talked about Jake Moody, third round, 99th pick overall. He is the second highest kicker drafted from 2006 to now. The only other drafted higher was Roberto Aguayo from Tampa Bay. He went to Tampa Bay. He was from Florida State. That didn't work out great, but Jake Moody, the first kicker off the board, a day two selection. I know a lot of local Lions fans were hoping that maybe day three Moody was going to be a potential target for Detroit. Well, San Francisco didn't give him a wait till Saturday.
No, and very happy for Jake. You never know how guys make transition. And all the time we talk about quarterbacks making that transition from the college to the NFL. You know, running backs, they tend to come in and produce right away. It's more of a reactionary position, the development of wide receivers, offensive linemen, defensive linemen. And kickers is one of those. It's just there's something unique and funny about it. But I think if there's anybody that can make that transition and make it quickly and excel at the next level, it's Jake Moody because of his demeanor, because of his experience, his time on task, and the fact that, you know, we see outwardly all of these other guys. You know, we saw Mozzie Smith with the box jumps, and we see the freak ability. We see some of these other, you know, guys working out. Well, it's not very impressive to watch a kicker work out, but if there's anybody that has worked harder on their craft, on what they're doing, there's not anybody in this draft that would outrank Jake Moody and what he's trying to accomplish.
So from the four players drafted on either day one or day two, to number four on our 7 from 77, the Saturday selections, I want to bunch the first two guys that the Wolverines saw go off the board on day three of the draft together for a couple of reasons. One, they're both Seattle Seahawks, drafted three picks apart, 151 and 154. But two, I think these are probably the two guys that I anticipated from Michigan side of things to be drafted earlier than they actually were. Both fifth-round picks in defensive lineman Mike Morris and center Olu Oluwatimi. Your thoughts on the fit with a team in Seattle that certainly loaded up at the offensive side? They took Jaxon Smith-Njigba in that first round. They took a Big Ten star and Devin Witherspoon, fifth overall at corner. I thought they had a really intriguing draft, and they added both Morris and Oluwatimi. Your thoughts on their fits out west?
Well, I know that John Schneider, their GM, loves Big Ten guys. He was in Green Bay for a little while, Big Ten country, and especially Big Ten offensive and defensive linemen. So when you look at both of these picks, he's looking at them for future value as well. Olu, I think, is going to be a plug-and-play center or guard, depending on what. And I didn't do a deep dive into Seattle's roster, but he's the guy that you could put at any of those three interior spots, and he's going to perform well for you. He's smart. We know what he did at Michigan. He's athletic. And then, you know, for Mike Morris, his numbers coming out of the combine weren't impressive. But I think when you do the deep dive and you turn the film on, you see the playmaker that he can be. I think they're going to ask him to put a little bit of that weight back on. They're going to use him in different ways, maybe not on the edge. They've got Boye Mafe from Minnesota. I mentioned Big Ten guys. They love their Big Ten guys. And I think he is going to have a long and productive career as a solid player out in Seattle.
Sixth round, it was Brad Robbins going back to his home state. He's going to Cincinnati, another Wolverine turned Bengal. You know, we talked about the funny call, and it seemed like he admitted on Twitter, yeah, he thought it was a joke. And, you know, if you're an Ohio native and you get drafted by a team in Cincinnati that has, I think, one of the brightest futures of any team in the NFL with the core that they've built. AFC North, that's a division where punting really matters, I think, more than some others. And he's got a chance to go in there right away and be a key part to a potential Super Bowl run.
Zach Taylor, their coach, understands field position. He knows how important that is. You mentioned it in the division, and to have a player like Brad Robbins that you can trust, that you can count on. And I'm going to say that a lot when you're talking, especially about specialists. You know what? Special teams coaches are weird dudes. And they will, more times than not, want to go with a guy, even if they know he might not be as good, but with a guy that has been in the NFL, give them a shot before they would give a rookie or before they would give somebody that doesn't have that same experience, simply because there's a trust factor. When you're coming out of the Big Ten, you're coming out of Michigan, and you've punted or kicked as long as both Jake Moody and Brad Robbins have, and you have all of that film, you have all of those pressure situations, you play in these stadiums, it does give special teams coaches and a guy like Zach Taylor the confidence that, hey, field position matters, it's going to matter in this division, it's going to matter when we get in the playoffs, and we want somebody that we can trust do that.
And then a couple of seventh rounders for Michigan. The only team to take exactly one Wolverine was the Miami Dolphins, and they select the Michigan native Ryan Hayes at 238th overall. I mean, let's face it, Miami has a really dynamic offense. They've got some incredible skill weapons, and they want to play an up-tempo style. So with Mike McDaniel as the head coach, we'll see how healthy Tua is. If Ryan Hayes can show that flexibility, that ability to play multiple positions on the offensive line, I think he can carve out a really interesting role with an ascending team, in my estimation.
It is, and it's a perfect fit. There's not a lot of depth on that Miami offensive line. It was curious, just, I'm not going to do Miami radio here, but they go out and they get Jalen Ramsey. They've got a couple of really good quarters, yet their first pick, they only had four of them. They didn't have that first round pick because they were apparently talking to somebody that we know well. But anyway, they go cornerback with Cam Smith. They don't address their offensive line until the seventh round with Ryan Hayes. And I think he's in a really good situation to not only make the roster, but, crack the, whether it's the starting lineup or the active roster on game days, because teams are going to keep six, possibly seven guys active on game day. And if that sixth or seventh guy can play multiple positions, like I believe Ryan Hayes will be able to do, it's a very valuable position for him to be in.
And last but not least, the two-time captain, Ronnie Bell, 253rd overall to San Francisco. Why I'm intrigued by this is that there are plenty of teams in the NFL that are beholden to their draft capital. The 49ers are very much not one of those teams. They might start Mr. Irrelevant from last year over the third overall pick in Trey Lance. They drafted Elijah Mitchell the same year as Trey Sermon, I think three rounds later. And yet Elijah Mitchell was the one who was tremendous. And Trey Sermon, he barely played for San Francisco. They are willing to admit a mistake, and they are willing to prop up someone late who is overplaying their draft capital, which is why a guy like Ronnie Bell going there, sometimes you're late in the seventh round, you'd rather go undrafted so you can pinpoint your location. I think for Ronnie, this is a really intriguing spot.
It is, and it may, if he went undrafted, it may have been where he picked to go, because you're going to one of the great offensive minds, play callers that they have there in San Francisco. Plus, you got Brian Griese on the coaching staff. You've got some familiarity with some of the personnel out there and some former teammates. So I think going to San Francisco for Ronnie Bell, and you kind of nailed it there with, hey, if you go produce, it doesn't matter if you're a first-round pick, if you're a fifth-round pick, seventh-round pick, or undrafted. If you produce, they're going to put you in the game. And Ronnie Bell is a guy that I have no doubt will produce at the next level.
All right, number five on our seven from 77. There were two other Wolverines who will now compete for jobs as undrafted free agents. Doesn't mean that they can't fulfill their dreams of playing on Sundays. Look at what Josh Ross did last year with Baltimore. DB Jamon Green, a special teams guy, going to the New York Giants, and tight end Joel Honigford now to the Arizona Cardinals. Again, you're facing an uphill battle anytime you're in those spots, but to me, with Jamon Green's special teams ability and with Arizona's transition right now as an organization that's very clearly playing for a little bit of a longer-term rebuild, they're going to shuffle through some more young guys probably over the next 12 months. Again, long shots for sure, but I think they made pretty strategic picks and have the ability to carve out a role.
And both guys, they understand they're going to get an opportunity. All right, you don't just go into camp as a throwaway guy. There's no throwaway roster spots when you go to training camp or you go to rookie mini camp. Whatever it is throughout the season, these guys are going to have an opportunity, and it may be an up and down battle. Hey, you're on the roster. You're on the 53 for this week. You're on practice squad for this week. Every time that Jamon Green steps on the field, every time Joel Honigfert steps on the field, they know that they've got to be right place, right time, doing what they're coached up to do, asked to do. They're going to do that. So whether they end up, you know, with Honigfert in Arizona or Jamon Green with the Giants, they're going to be most likely on one of the 32 rosters throughout the course of this year.
Yeah, no doubt. And the expanded practice squad numbers help immensely. One of the positives, I think, in what they adjusted during the COVID season to help progress. All right, number six on our 7 from 77. I got a few bullet points to talk about just league-wide from the NFL draft and the 259 selections. I'll go through them, and then we'll ask you just for anything else that stood out to you overall. But, you know, three quarterbacks in the top four: Bryce Young to Carolina, C.J. Stroud to Houston, Anthony Richardson to Indianapolis. Your thoughts on those three? And also, Will Levis slipping all the way to the second round, something I don't think a lot of people expected at about 7:30 last Thursday.
No, but I think you look and you look at the record number of quarterbacks that were taken in the top, you know, 125. I think it was 11 quarterbacks that were taken. Everybody's trying to find that diamond in the rough. They're trying to find their Brock Purdy. But the two top guys, C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young, they're the most ready to go in. Everything that we talked about before the draft, Anthony Richardson at Indianapolis, I hope that they give him time to develop, that they just don't throw him in there and say, hey, we want you to run around and make plays and be exciting. I hope they give him some time to develop. It's because it's going to take some time. And for Will Levis, I don't think the only thing that is a detriment to Tennessee for taking Will Levis is the fact that they don't have that fifth-year option on him. Both of these other, all three of these other guys, they have that extra year of development before a team has to decide if you're our guy or not moving forward. For Will Levis, it's going to be a little bit quicker than that, and not a great wide receiving core to work with down in Tennessee. They've got some work that needs to be done in that regard, but I just, again, same thing. I hope that they give him some time to sit, to learn, to develop before they throw him in the fire.
Defensively, the top player off the board, Will Anderson, and the way it happened was unique. Houston jumping back from 12, one of the picks they got in the Deshaun Watson trade, to then make bookend picks 2 and 3, Stroud and then Anderson, and they gave up a lot. They gave up their first-round pick for next season, plus some other things, including 12, to go get Will Anderson. At least they did it for a guy who I think a lot of people believe is as safe as any top-end defensive player in the draft. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, when you're looking to rebuild an organization, and D'Amico Ryans is a defensive guy, there's no question that he wanted to go get Will Anderson. But if you're a team that is trying to dig out of a giant hole, you want to be able to build around a couple of guys that you believe can lead your team. Offensively, they did that with the number two pick in C.J. Stroud. They believe that he's going to be their offensive pillar, their leader on offense, a quarterback that they're going to continue to put parts around. And the same thing defensively, you've got to be able to pressure opposing quarterbacks. I think Will Anderson is that type of player, and they're going to build around him. Two-time captain at Alabama. We heard all of the great things that were talked about him and how much football means to him, how much he wants it. But he's a terrific football player. He's a good leader. And you got two pillars, one on offense and one on defense, for an organization that is trying to build something.
Let's give a Cliff Notes version of what you've probably been talking about ad nauseum on the morning show this week. The Lions Hall, top five guys, Jahmyr Gibbs at running back, that dynamic playmaker from Alabama. Jack Campbell, someone that Michigan saw the last few years at Iowa. Also Sam Laporta, a Hawkeye who I know you like. Brian Branch, defensive back. Hendon Hooker, an intriguing option as someone who does not have to play, might not be able to play a whole lot this year at quarterback, but an option in the potential post-Jared Goff era. I think a lot of Lions fans in listening to your show and others on Friday were a bit perplexed about a running back at 12, a linebacker at 18. But when you look at the totality of this class, what is your reaction to what the Lions did?
Well, Jahmyr Gibbs, and I'm going to use him as an example when we get to number 7 on 7 from 77, about a guy that is on Michigan's current roster right now. But he is an individual that athletic ability off the charts. Jack Campbell, athletic ability off the charts. Sam Laporta, when we played them in the Big Ten championship game a year ago, that was the big concern, was trying to contain him offensively. He does a great job not only finding ways to get open, but then yards after catch. He's a special talent. And Brian Branch is a player that most people thought was going to go late first, maybe even mid first, for him to fall to the Lions middle of the second round. You got four players that are probably going to start, whether they start day one, but at some point throughout the course of their rookie season. But Jahmyr Gibbs, Jack Campbell, I think those are day one starters. Sam Laporta should be day one starter. And then Brian Branch is probably going to be a bunch in a whole lot of rotation regarding, you know, the secondary and what the Lions have done, you know, throughout free agency. So it doesn't knock your socks off in regards to, hey, you had the sixth pick, you had a chance to draft maybe the number one talent in the draft, but you decided to pass on it. Now all of a sudden, hey, you've put another weapon on offense. You've tried to solidify the run defense with Campbell, you know, on defensively. And you're just adding pieces to the puzzle. And this indication is to me that the Lions believe they can win right now.
Totally. Anything else stood out to you? I know the Eagles got some rave reviews. I think it's fair to say the Seahawks did some good things. There were some other teams that maybe didn't have a ton of picks, but still tried to make the most of them. What else stood out about this draft from you from an NFL standpoint?
Well, it kind of drove me nuts. Not only because the Eagles got Jalen Carter, and they didn't, you know, they only had to trade up one pick to get him, and at the bottom of the top 10 there. But then they got Nolan Smith. I mean, it's really the rich get richer, and I despise them simply because I spent a decade in Washington, and obviously they're right up the road, division opponent. So, you know, there's always things in a draft where you look at and you say, that's interesting. And it was Houston trading up, Arizona trading down, then trading up, and watching the number of trades that happened in this draft. Not only was it a number of the record number of quarterbacks taken early, but also a record number of trades. General managers wheeling and dealing throughout the draft, trying to make sure that they got the guys that they identified that they really wanted, and being willing to give up some draft capital. That's another thing about, you know, the Lions draft. They knew who they wanted, then, and they didn't wait and roll the dice and think, well, maybe Jahmyr Gibbs will be there at 18. Maybe Jack Campbell will be there a little bit later. They knew who they wanted. They identified it, and they went and got them. And their picks, I think this draft, while there wasn't as many top-end first-round talents, first-round grades, you saw teams draft for the individuals that they thought would help them win right now.
All right, before we get to Derek Moore, number 7 on our 7 from 77. First time I've done this with you, but I'm fascinated about where this goes. I want to bring in the John Jansen crystal ball, and I'm just going to leave it open. I'm not going to say give me the one or two most likely guys. I'm just going to flat out ask you, next year, this podcast, which Wolverines are we talking about as first-round picks in the NFL draft?
Well, I mean, it's always kind of a roll-the-dice moment, because there might be somebody that has an unbelievable season that really steps up and plays well, develops, and comes into their own. But the three guys right now that I would identify as having that potential would be a couple of guys that made that decision to come back, and that's Zach Zinter and Trevor Keegan. Now, Are you going to have two guards drafted in the first round? I don't know. We got to wait to see what the depth of offensive line talent, what there's going to be a run on next year, what teams are going to need. But I think both of those guys have the potential, especially Zinter, to be one of those, you know, 32 that are called in the first round. And another guy that I think it's going to be interesting to see how Jahmyr Gibbs does this year. And if Donovan Edwards can stay healthy, and if he gets enough in sharing carries with Blake Corum, he could possibly be one of those dual threat running backs. Because what did we hear about Jahmyr Gibbs? What did we hear about, Bijan Robinson coming out of Texas? Is they're three down guys. You can line them up at receiver as much as you can in the backfield. They're offensive weapons. And Donovan Edwards, we've heard from guys on the coaching staff, and we've heard from Jim Harbaugh himself, Donovan Edwards, if he was a wide receiver, maybe one of the best in the Big Ten, maybe the best on this roster. So when you have that ability, it increases your value as an offensive weapon. So I'm not calling necessarily for him to be a first-round pick, but I think he could have that type of season, and he's that type of talent.
The reality is we hear a lot in the summer about players, running backs, who will, we're going to split them out wide, play them in the slot, all that stuff. That doesn't happen very often. But it feels like Jahmyr Gibbs is uniquely qualified for that, and we have seen Donovan Edwards do that. And quite frankly, looking at this upcoming season for Michigan, if you got Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards, I'd like to see him on the field together, right? It really stresses a defense in a unique way. So I could absolutely see it. And you know, one more guy I want to throw out there. It's, again, not at a premium position, but Junior Colson at linebacker, he might be one of the top 32 players in the NFL draft next year. We'll see. I mean, he has eligibility after this. We'll see if he, you know, stays or goes. That obviously factors into a lot of these potential decisions. But, I mean, if you're seeing a guy like Jack Campbell go at 18, I think Junior Colson could be in that conversation next year.
Yeah, if you're talking about athletic ability, productivity, sideline to sideline type of guy that can cover tight ends or running backs out of the backfield, yeah, Junior Colson definitely fits the bill. And another guy that I think is going to be creeping up draft boards, whether it's next year or the year after, is my guest. I'm so excited about what he brings to this team. He's got a great first step off the ball. He's explosive. He's got a lot of potential, long arms. We saw him abuse some offensive linemen in this year's spring game, and he's got plenty of eligibility left, so don't worry, he's not leaving anytime soon, and that's Derek Moore.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Now joined by edge rusher Derek Moore, sophomore, going into his sophomore season, second spring ball. Derek, first of all, thanks for joining me. And I want to know from your perspective, how was your second spring ball different than your first?
First, thanks for having me. So what I felt that was different about it was that I felt more confident. I felt like I played with more confidence. My technique was better. I know the system better, so that's why I just felt like I was more confident this year than my last spring game.
I know confidence comes with experience. You've had some experience. You had experience in last season's games as well, but now it's year two with Coach Elston, year two with Jesse Minter. How much more comfortable are you with the terminology and the system that's in place?
I feel like I'm way comfortable now. Now that I have built this great relationship that I have with my coaches, you know, not only just them, you know, learning from the older players that was here, like Mike Moe, Mozzie, and them guys, you know. And also I watched like a little bit of A.N. and Ojabo because we all play the same position, you know. And I just learned from them and watched their techniques and learned from their mistakes and see how can I, you know, feed off them.
When you look at some of the film from Ojabo, from Hutch, from Mike, what is it that you learned from it? What is it you're trying to take away?
So I watch all of them differently. So with Aiden, I try to watch his get off. If you watch Aiden and you see how the way he get off the ball, he times it up real good and he real explosive off the ball. Ajabo, I like how the way Ajabo can dip around, so I try to work on my dipping and bending more. Mike Mo can play outside three tech, you know, because he's more bigger and leaner, which the same as me, you know. So I kind of just try to, you know, use different moves that Mike Mo used, and a lot of things he also taught me from last year.
Do you see yourself as a guy that could play all of the positions up front, not just edge, depending on the situation?
Yeah, you know, I see myself playing anything, you know. I love to be on the field, so anything to help the team win, I'm always willing to do.
I always try and get, being a former offensive lineman, trying to get into the mindset of an edge rusher, because it's a little bit different now. The defenses are different. The way that they use you guys, it used to just be defensive end or outside linebacker in a 3-4 defense. Now they've got this new terminology of edge rusher. How would you describe your position, first of all?
How would I describe it?
Let me give you an example, because when I was playing, we had a 5 technique, obviously head up to outside of the tackle, and that was, you know, over under defense, and it was easy for me to understand where they were, what they were trying to do. We also had, you know, in an over defense, we had an outside guy, but he was generally on part of the tight end. The only time we had an outside rusher that I would classify like an edge rusher was in a 3-4 defense, but they were classified as linebackers. Now with the edge rusher, there's guys that are better at stopping the run, and they're used more as defensive ends, as I would classify them. There are other guys that are good at both and able to put, you know, pressure on quarterbacks from that outside rush edge position. Where, I guess the question is, where do you see the best fit for yourself now that you've been in this defense for a couple of years?
I see the best. First, I would say how the way we, you know, use our edges is kind of good, because it kind of helps you to see, like, it kind of helps you for, like, the draft. It shows that you can do many things. You know, you can line up on the outside, rush from outside. You can go down to the three tech. You can jump. We can sometimes drop into coverage. So we do many things, and I feel like that can also help me in the long run.
When you were in high school, were you a guy that dropped into coverage, or is that something new that you've done here at Michigan?
I've been doing this since high school. You know, I played at St. Francis, so I played with Coach Posey. Mm-hmm. Well-known guy here. He kind of made St. Francis program the same as Michigan program. So a lot of things that I was doing at St. Francis were kind of the same that I'm already doing now.
So you mentioned one of the things that you know, was dipping your shoulder that you were trying to take from Ojabo. And in the spring game, I saw the dip. I saw you able to get around it in offensive tackle. And on the very next snap, I called it abusing an offensive lineman, because you came back inside, you knocked him on his ass. How much do you think about one move setting up the next?
All right.
I know you know exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. I'm not going to name names, but it happened.
Yeah, so I'm going to kind of give a replay on that play. I didn't know that I was going to end up doing my own teammate like that. You know, I ended up apologizing to him for that. I ain't, you know.
Hey, it's a game. I have been knocked on my ass many times by teammates. I've knocked my teammates on their ass. Yeah. It's part of the game.
Yeah. But, you know, going into the spring game, you know, I like to go speed of power a lot. And a lot of our tackles here knows that I like to go speed of power. So for the spring game, I told myself I wasn't going to do no speed to power moves. I was just going to work on my dipping and bending the whole game. Leading to that, you know, long arm, all I was doing was dipping and bending. But I knew that Tuttle, number 13, our quarterback, all he did was like to step up and run. So going into that, I knew we had him backed up. I knew if I was going to try to dip around him, Tuttle was just going to step up and try to run through one of the B gaps. So I had in my head that I was going to long arm the offensive tackle. And how the way I set up my long arm, I aimed for the inside pec of an offensive lineman. And then I just drop him back. And for some reason, I don't know, he just off
crumbled.
The ground. Yeah, he was just off the ground.
You can say it. It's okay. It's okay.
For some reason, he was off the ground, and Tuttle was right there. And I tried to go for the ball, tip the ball. The ball tipped in the air.
So here's where I want to get to, because there are a lot of guys that come in with physical attributes. And last year, you were a guy that identified because of your speed, your size, your get off of the line of scrimmage, and your long arms as a guy that, as a former offensive tackle, would be difficult to block. Now all of a sudden it becomes even a bigger challenge when you have the move off the move. How much has Coach Elston and the rest of the coaching staff helped you with that mental side of things, of not just being the guy out there that's bigger, faster, stronger, but also being able to outsmart the offensive lineman?
I feel like we work on that a lot, especially in meetings. You know, we try to just like set up all our moves. You know, we always taught to, you know, your first couple of rushes, you know, go with speed to power, because them first two rushes or first three are going to set the rest of your moves up. So, you know, we taught to go speed to power. Now the offensive tackle going to change the set to that. Now he's going to even try to overset you. You know, if he oversets you, fall inside. If he, you know, he try to power set you, you know, hit him with a speed move, things like that. So
when you come out of spring ball, I know there's always things that coach will tell you, hey, I want you to work on this. I know players have that checklist in their mind as well. What is it that you want to work on from spring ball to the start of fall camp?
What I want to work on, just being more explosive off the ball. You know, I feel like I can get off more on the ball. Working in some more on my dipping and bending, using my hands better. Also just, you know, playing the 4-eye better. You know, I struggled with that last season, and also rushing out of the 4-eye and 3-tech, because a lot of times we rush out of the 4-eye and 3-tech. So I just want to be able to, you know, be able to rush from both ways so that can help me.
You are, I would classify as a sneaky guy. I was looking at the depth chart. I was looking at the roster, and 275. I don't know, you know, plus or minus right now. I don't know where you're at, but you're a guy that, to me, that plays more like a 255 guy with the explosion. Do you feel like you have that sneaky power, or that sneaky, I'm bigger than most people think I am when they look at me? Because when you walk in here, I can see it, but when you're on the field, I'm like, God, that guy, it's not possible that a guy could be 275 as a sophomore at Michigan that moves like you move.
Yeah, so first, my weight kind of like shift up and down. So last season, I played at 270, around 270, 275. I felt more strong. You know, I ain't really feel explosive how I normally feel when I'm like 260, 265. That's where I like to play at, you know. Right now, currently, I'm 265. I feel better. I feel stronger. I feel more explosive off the ball. But me being heavy, like 270, 275, I kind of still feel sneaky. I just feel like I may just lack of a lot of things when I'm not, you know, the weight that I feel comfortable playing at.
Every athlete knows what their optimum body size is, but as you go through Michigan, obviously it could change, right? It can fluctuate. It could be heavier, it could be lighter. How much, and guys talk all the time about Ben Herbert and the strength and conditioning staff. How much do you talk to him about, this is what I want compared to what he's hearing from the coaches and he wants to see from you?
Yeah, I got a good relationship with Coach Herb and Abigail. You know, I lock in with them too all the time. I sit down and talk to them about many things. You know, we make plans. Abigail helped me, you know, sit down with me, help me, you know, map out how my meals should go on a daily. I talked to Coach Herb, you know, he kind of helped me, you know, kind of just like we just have talks about it, like how much how I would have to like sacrifice, you know, a lot of things in order for me to play at the weight that I want to, you know, play at and things like that. So I kind of just lock in with them to get to where I want to be.
When you look at the depth chart, obviously you keep moving up the depth chart. There's no more Mike Morris. And I know you came in after Ojabo and Hutch, but it really feels like, hey, this is the year that Derek Moore takes off. How excited are you about this upcoming football season?
I hear a lot of people talking about it. A lot of people bring it up to me. I try not to really think about it, you know, because we got other players in our room as well. You know, I feel like we all good enough, you know, so I just try to just put my head down and just be humble and just work and just let the things come to me when the season come.
What goals do you have for yourself?
The goals that I have for myself for the coming up season is just, you know, do better than last year. You know, that's my goal. I don't really have any stats or anything. I don't really want to throw no numbers up in the air, but I just want to be better than I was last year. And I feel like I am better mentally, you know, just being around the team and practicing, you know, I just feel more confident in myself. So
there's a lot of depth everywhere. Depth up front on the D-line, depth at linebacker, and depth in the secondary. I know there's some guys that have graduated and moved on, but it feels like there's good depth of talent, good depth of experience. How good can this year's defense be?
I feel like it's going to be better than, you know, last year, any other year. You know, I feel like, you know, we just keep rebuilding each year. You know, we got a lot of guys who came back. We got a lot of older guys, you know, who's still here as well. And we got a lot of guys who are in my class and also freshmen, you know, who can also step up and play, you know, a big role in our defense. So, you know, I feel like we're talented everywhere. You know, a lot of guys left last year, but I really don't feel that we lost anybody, you know, because I feel like wherever we lost somebody, we got somebody behind them that's going to step up. And I have full confidence in them that, you know, they're going to do their job and we're going to be dominant again this year.
You mentioned watching some film on the guys that were here at Michigan. Is there anybody in the NFL that you look at and you say, you know what, I want to put this move into my game. I want to mirror what I'm doing after. And it doesn't have to be just one guy, but is there anybody in the NFL that you try and pattern some of your game after?
Yeah, for sure. A lot of guys in the NFL that I watch, I try to watch guys who like similar to me, you know, similar body frame and things like that, and how they play the game. You know, I watch Khalil Mack, you know, he like to go a lot of long on speed of power. Reggie White, you know, I like to watch his hump, how the way he abused it, you know, during his time. The Bosa's, you know, how the way they just get off the ball and swipe a lot. The Watts, I like their style. Yeah, there's plenty of guys that I watch, you know.
So I'll give you one tip. This is how old I am. I played against Reggie White.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't get the hump move on me, but I did get called for holding. It was a false accusation,
yeah,
but I did get called for holding. Derek, thanks for joining me. Appreciate your time. Best of luck as you go through this offseason and get ready for fall camp.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks to Derek. I really enjoyed the conversation and getting to know him a little bit better. I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation as well. We've got a lot to get to throughout the course of this offseason. We've got player interviews. We've got coach interviews. We're going to have some Michigan football alums join us here on the podcast. So make sure you stay tuned for all your Michigan football information, the comings and goings and everything that's going on at Jim Beckler Hall right here on In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen, presented by Meijer, presenting sponsor of the 2022 Michigan football season and proud supporter of hundreds of local sports teams across the Midwest. In the Trenches is part of our Michigan Athletics Podcast Network, MGO Blue Podcasts. The preceding is a Learfield presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.